everybody. This is English for You, the program that helps you improve your English. A very warm welcome. In the studio, I'll have my Fosaco students, two boys, the young generation. Boys, would you put up your hand? Right, from the ninth grade, so the young generation is pushing their way. And two ladies, not that young generation, from the 12th grade. Would you put up your hand, ladies? Kota, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Andrew, how's it hanging?
I'm also fine, thanks.
Good. Anna, what's up?
Everything's fine, Victor.
Good. Bence, how are you doing?
It's cool now, thanks.
Cool?
Yeah.
All right, good. So this is the first time. Aren't you nervous a bit?
A bit, I'm nervous.
Just a bit. All right, thank you. Today's special guest is Mr. Brian Hodson from the United States. And he is a Fulbright grantee, and he's been in Hungary for over a year now. And he is... His special field is Eastern European history. Thank you very much for joining us.
I'm pleased to be here.
And I have a picture here pretty soon, and I wonder if this picture is characteristic of the state where you were born. So I would like to have that picture. Right.
Yes.
It's not very picturesque. So what is the name of the state where you're from?
I was born in Kansas.
Right? And it's just that flat, it's a plain,
yes.
No mountains?
Not in Kansas, no.
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 And I've read somewhere that this is the exact middle of the United States, the geographical center of the United States. And the nickname is the Sunflower State.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I have another very characteristic picture, so could we have the next one? And I'm turning to my students, whether they recognize this film. It's not coming, but it's going to come pretty soon. Yes.
Yes.
Put up your hand if you recognize it. Kota, what is this?
It's the Wizard of Oz.
And you recognize the characters?
Yeah. That's Dorothy in the second from the right. Then there's the Cowardly Lion.
Excellent, the Cowardly Lion. And this one?
I don't know.
Could you help us, Brian?
Yes, that's the Scarecrow.
The Scarecrow. And next to the Scarecrow is?
The Tin Man.
The Tin Man. Has it got anything to do with Kansas? Was it a good idea to put it on the projector?
It's a common joke that we suffer.
Yes? So what is it?
The story was set in Kansas, and it begins with a tornado, which is common for Kansas.
So tornado, which is common in Kansas. Have you ever experienced a tornado?
Not personally. My parents' house was destroyed by a tornado before I was born, but that's the closest I've been to one.
Right. I asked you a couple of days ago, Brian, where are you from? And it wasn't easy for you to answer this question. Why not?
Like a lot of Americans, I've moved a number of times to a number of different places. And so the question, where are you from, might be where I was born, it might be where I last lived, where I studied, my favorite place that I lived. So there's a number of different ways I could answer this, and I'm never quite sure what answer somebody's asking or expecting.
Right. I have Brian's transcript in the studio. Brian, what's a transcript?
It's the record of your grades from from high school or from university. It lists all the grades of all the courses you've taken.
Right, so here, this is the transcript, and it's going to be on the projector soon, or it's right there. So this is the transcript. It said, Brian Andrew.
Yes.
Hodson, and it says Georgetown University, and it lists all the classes, the subjects, and the grades. Brian, would you help me read out just the classes?
I can't read them off of the screen from here. This is my second semester at the university. I had macroeconomics, U.S. political systems, empire and independence in the modern world, which was a history class. Map of the Modern World, which is a geography class, and intensive basic Russian.
Right, so you can see that a couple of subjects, and I would like you to look at the grades. We have a couple of letters here. Andrew, can you help us find out what they stand for, these letters? For example, we have this F. What do you think it means?
The F perhaps means failed.
Yes.
Perhaps it means fine.
Fine or failed, which one? And then comes, we have C. Is it good or bad?
I think it's neither. So it's in the middle of
So which is the best? Which one do you think is the best in America? A. You're absolutely right. And we have a B+, which is not that bad. We have an S. What does that mean?
It's satisfactory, and it's for a course that isn't graded on a scale.
Right. We have a W. Again, I'm turning to you, Brian. You must help us.
Any guesses?
Wonderful.
It's withdrawal.
Which means that
I resigned myself from the class before the end of the semester.
Right. And here I can see that academic dismissal, 1990. What does that mean? Which is very formal. So what does it mean in
It means that I was asked not to return.
So this man was asked not to return. So what was the problem?
I was not a good student, really.
Just lazy?
Partly that, yes. Instead of studying for my classes, I would go to the library and read about other things. Instead of doing my work, I would go to the library and read about other things. And I didn't pay attention to my classes. I slept in some of them. I did not do well on the exams. And even though they gave me opportunities to improve my record, I did not. And eventually they decided that maybe the university was not the right place for me.
See, so I didn't invite you to humiliate you. So now we know that you are studying and working on your PhD. Yes. So you somehow made up for that period of your life.
Yeah.
How bad is a bad transcript later on?
It's something that will go with you wherever you go. At each subsequent school that I applied to, when I applied for a master's program, I had to give them a copy of this transcript. And when I applied to a PhD program, I also had to give them a copy of this transcript. So they could always see that the first years of my university education, I did very poorly. And hopefully now, I'm far enough along after the PhD that I won't have to show this to anybody ever again, except maybe my children. And when I'm angry with them, then and encouraging them to do well in school.
Right. Okay, now, there's going to be a picture. There is a picture. And Kota, please, I would like you to talk about this picture, to describe it.
Right, so we can see a battle in this picture, I guess, and it might be, I'm sure it's in the past, in far past times, and I don't know, that there are people dressed in strange clothes, like Turks, I don't know, perhaps, and I can see that it has a very, it wants to impress you, so it has a...
It's very energetic,
yeah.
Right?
It might be painted in the Baroque
period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe a little later, if I know well, it was painted in 1825, so a little later. But you're absolutely right with the period. What does that picture mean to you, Brian? You recognize
this
picture, first of all?
Yes, I do. This picture hangs in the National Gallery when you first come in the front door. It's in front of you. And I first saw this picture more than 10 years ago. And it was one of the first things I saw when visiting Hungary. And it just captured me, this energetic scene, a heroic moment. And it was of an event that I'd never heard of in the United States, but obviously of some kind of importance to Hungary. And pictures such as this and some of the other artwork and monuments around Hungary was one of the things that encouraged me to study Eastern European history.
So this picture helped Brian to overcome that lazy period of yours, right? Is that true?
Yes.
Now, the title of the picture is Zrini's Sortie. Now, a sortie is a short attack made by an enemy from the position of defense. I wonder if you can come up with the Hungarian word, Zrini's Sortie.
Kirohanás.
Excellent. Say it again, please.
Kirohanás.
Okay, good. Right. Now, as you know, Brian is studying history. And I've hidden a couple of word cards in your desk, so this is the time to show the word card. And basically, I wanted to show the different periods in history. What have you got, Kata?
Modern.
Would you say it again?
Modern.
Good. Andrew?
Prehistoric.
Yes. Anna?
Medieval.
Everybody,
okay.
Please. Medieval.
Medieval.
Ancient.
Ancient. Everybody?
Ancient.
Good. Now, obviously, this is not the right order. So which one do you think comes first?
Well, prehistoric.
Say it again, Andrew.
Prehistoric.
You are first, then comes...
Ancient.
Ancient. Bence, would you hold it up? Ancient, great, then comes...
I'm in great trouble. And medieval.
Everybody again? No problem. Medieval.
Medieval.
Good. And then?
Then comes modern.
Modern. Thank you very much. Excellent. We're going to have the four word cards in chronological order on the projector. And the transition period lasts for a long time. Still, people like to link the transition to one historic event. Now, this is where I would like you to help me. So what do you think the difference or the event between prehistoric and ancient? And again, ancient and medieval. Can you help us? Anybody?
Yes, perhaps the creation of the state might be a point where prehistoric turns to ancient.
Like, can you come up with the name of a state?
No. Athens, perhaps.
Athens, so Greek or Egypt,
yeah.
Right? Anybody else for this? No? How about the transition between ancient and medieval?
The collapse of Rome.
And then would you say it again?
The collapse of Rome.
The collapse, the fall of Rome. Can you come up with a date?
Yeah, surely. 476.
476. Excellent. Yeah. Off the top of her
Very
head.
Good.
Fantastic, isn't it? How about medieval and modern? What do you think the transition is?
Isn't it a too large jump between medieval and modern? I don't know.
Well, by medieval, we mean the end of the Renaissance or the beginning of the Renaissance, and then comes, I believe, modern.
Yes.
Brian, so what is prehistoric?
Literally, prehistoric is everything before written culture. Things that we can only know from archaeology.
Right. How about ancient and medieval?
And you have this correct. The boundary that they set between ancient and medieval is the fall of Rome, or roughly the 5th century.
Right. And medieval and modern?
As you mentioned, it's the Renaissance. And you're also correct that this gap is very wide. There's a period that's put between those two called early modern to cover this gap.
And what if I say the discovery of America? Could that be?
That would certainly be after the end of medieval. Certainly mark the definite end.
Right. And what if I say the English Civil War, 1642?
Yes.
It could be another very important
turning
point. That
would be in the modern period already.
Right. Okay. I asked my students to choose one area or a person or a battle that they would like to study because this period interested them somehow. So we're going to have the first picture here. And if you recognize that this is yours, would you put up your hand?
This is mine.
This is mine. So Kota, what are you going to
talk
about?
This is the Cathedral of Chartres. And I'm really interested in arts, more so in arts than in history. So I'm interested in this age because it has this Gothic style, which I really love, because it's very interesting that religious belief has created such things like this cathedral and those little houses. I love them, I really do. And
have you ever been to this cathedral?
No, I haven't. I have been to another cathedral, which is not as famous, but really as beautiful.
Can you come up with the name? You
remember? It's the Cathedral of Strasbourg. And what else? Yeah, the way that people lived in that age, that's also interesting, because we don't have as much written things about this.
Right. Thank you very much. It was really nice. Now, the next picture. And if you recognize it, would you put up your hand, please? Right, it's coming. Right. So whose picture do you think it is?
I think it's mine.
Don't say a word. Do you recognize this famous person? Does anybody recognize?
Sure, they do.
Bente?
Maybe it's Napoleon.
Yes, Bonaparte, Napoleon. Why did you choose Napoleon?
What interested me in history was Napoleon's war in Russia in 1812. He suffered a great defeat from the Russians, and after 100 years, Hitler did the very same mistakes as he did before.
So what you're interested in is mistakes in history.
Yes, especially.
How can you come up with the same mistake again and again and again? Right. Very, very interesting. Thank you very much. Now, another picture, and we have two more people left.
I've chosen the pyramids in Giza. It's a very interesting age for me because they are 4,500 years old, and they are 146 meter high.
So you checked how high are?
No, I didn't check, but I read it. It's higher than the St. Paul's Cathedral in London or St. Peter's Cathedral in the Vatican.
Which is just fantastic. Have you ever been to Egypt?
No, I haven't.
Would you like to go there?
Yeah.
Would it be the first place to go? Maybe.
It would be the first place.
Thank you very much, Bence. And again, another person, and obviously it's Anna's choice.
Tricky.
Wait. If you recognize this very famous person, put up your hand. You do?
But she told me so.
Oh, yeah, so it's easy. It's easy. Okay, so Anna.
Okay, so he's Joseph II. He was a Hungarian king and an Austrian emperor, so Habsburg emperor anyway. And, I think he was a bit too dedicated and a bit too power-thirsty, probably, because he wrote together with his mother, Maria Theresa, and he wanted to carry out all his plans. But, so for example, he wanted to unify his country, which had three parts, Hungary, Bohemia, and Austria, and obviously people were unsatisfied with him. But he was an enlightened emperor, and I really admire him for example, the Edict of Tolerance, which meant the freedom of religion. And I think it belongs to his good ideas.
Right. Thank you very much. So this was a tragic personality.
Yes, I agree
with you. And now it's going to be my turn. I would like to study something, and you can see this map, and it says the sandwich. Would you say the sand?
Sandwich.
Sandwich. This is the American way. The British way is the sandwich. The Sandwich Isles, and they were discovered by Captain Cook in 1778. Can you come up with today's name for this?
Maybe it's Hawaii.
Congratulations. This is Hawaii, the Hawaiian Islands. And Cook named these islands after his benefactor, the Earl of Sandwich. And we are going to talk about this island, which is called Maui. And now we're going to have another picture of Maui, the island. Yes, here we go. For example, this is the Iao Valley, where there was a huge battle where Kamehameha the Great defeated his enemies with the cannon he borrowed from the white man. But we are not going to talk about King Kamehameha. But there's the plain here, very beautiful area, and we are traveling to this area. The most important revenue in Maui is tourism, revenue. Income, all the money, especially the money that the government receives. Now, I would like Group 1 to listen to the second largest revenue and the history of this. Group 2. I'm going to give you two names. Samuel Alexander and Henry Baldwin. Everything about these two people. Would you roll the tape, please?
Sugar forever changed the face of Maui. Next to tourism, the second largest source of revenue. Maui grows about one-fourth of Hawaii's sugar crop. Hundreds of years ago, the Polynesians brought the first cane to chew and use with medicine. By the time the first white person arrived, it grew wild. In 1869, Samuel Alexander and Henry Baldwin, sons of Maui missionaries, purchased 12 acres near Makawao to grow sugar cane. Together, they pioneered the building of the great Hamakua Ditch that would irrigate Maui's dry central plain.
Right. Kota, anything about it?
Yeah, he said something about sugar canes and that it was used as a medicine. And there were two men who came here.
Yeah, this is their task. And Polynesians brought sugar cane.
Yeah.
And then it grew wild, right? And this is very, very important. The second largest revenue. Right after tourism. And what about the two people, Anna?
Well, I could catch that's the date. It was 1869, and I don't know, they came there, and I
yes, know, and they bought an and they bought 13 acres or 12 mm-hmm. acres, and okay. they pioneered to dig a huge ditch to irrigate this land, supply dry land with water to irrigate mm-hmm. the land, right? So, as you can see, I would like to go to this island, and I would like to study the history of sugar in Maui mm-hmm. for 3 years. That would be lovely, right? Now, Brian has been studying something different, and let me just show you something, and with this clip, I would like you to guess the period he is studying. Please watch for the clothes, weapons, the dance, the music, and there is going to be a name that might be a clue. Okay, roll the tape, will you?
Legények, de most már eljárt az idő, indulni kell.
Máté, de ezekkel mi legyen?
Ezt a hármat elküldjük ajándékba Bottyán generálisnak. Gyakor!
No.
Vállalom!
Régi szegény legény vagyok én. Sok marhát csempésztem át a hazára.
Right, so anybody can guess the period? Andrew, please.
Yes, it was in the times when the Lavons and the Kurds were fighting in Hungary. So, in the time of the Austrian monarchy.
The Habsburg Empire. Right. Excellent. Congratulations. How is Kurds in English?
In articles, we would just use the word Kurds because it's to us a foreign phrase. It translates as crusader.
Right. How is Lobans in English?
This word we don't translate at all because even Hungarian historians don't really know for certain the origin of the word.
Right, so English is an easy language. You can use kuruts, kurutsis, lobantsis, right?
Yeah.
So, right. Why exactly this period?
Partly because of the artwork that I described a few minutes ago, and because I've found it to be an interesting period of transition for Hungary and for Central Europe from the end of really a feudal regime, a feudal life, to modern systems of authority, modern systems of government.
Right. And we're going to have this. So the exact period is from the siege of Vienna to the Pragmatic Sanction. Ladies, you're going to have this final exam in history. It's looming up. Can you come up with the date?
No.
No. The definite answer is no. Anna?
I'm sorry.
Brian?
1683.
1683. And the pragmatic...
Sorry, it must have been earlier than 1740.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Right, so 16, and then the pragmatic sanction?
1723.
1725. Okay. Now, you go to archives, right, a couple
yes.
of times, and this is the place where old records and the documents
yes.
are stored. And how many languages do you have to use?
For this period, really two, possibly three. And the two most important are German and Latin. Documents from the Habsburg Empire, from inside the court, are almost always in German. And documents from the Hungarian authorities, from Hungarian counties, is usually in Latin. There is some correspondence that already is written in Hungarian, but mostly what I've been working with has been in German and Latin.
Right. And you started learning Hungarian from this book?
Yes.
Right. This book was written in 1965. Was it the latest book you can get hold
no,
of?
No. Well, I found that in a used bookstore in the United States.
Yeah, right. This is your lovely family.
Yes.
Just one sentence about this, about the kids, whether they speak Hungarian or not.
Our son Nathan is 3 years old. He's going now to an Ovoda, but he's learning Slovak and Hungarian.
And the other?
And our daughter Victoria was born here. She maybe understands a little Hungarian.
Right. Brian, thank you very much for coming, and take care of the kids. See you next time. Bye-bye.